you. Production. Our own Connie Chandler, one of our own practitioners in-house. She's also our own visionary and our own mystic. A few other great things. The way that she practices our beliefs is just so gentle and fun and with ease and bliss. She's great. I often remark to Connie, I didn't expect adulthood to be so much fun. May I introduce my dear friend and ours, Connie Chandler.
I know it's on. Good morning. I was delighted when Kate told me that the board would like me to talk about forgiveness. It's a really interesting subject and one that's included in a lot of the classes that I teach here in Science Mind. So I had an opportunity to think a lot about it in the last few days as I was preparing this talk. And the way I would like to start out is to ask you to just give me a little data about who's here this morning. I would like to know, and I'd like you to raise your hand, if any of you in your lives have ever been hurt. I've been hurt. Please keep your hands up. Let's add the people who've ever been abused or abandoned or rejected. And add the people who've been betrayed or neglected, robbed or injured by someone else. And now let's add the people who love someone who has ever been injured by another. Now, so does it feel like we're having a revival here? Yeah, say hallelujah. Okay. So it seems like it's a pretty universal experience to feel like you've been injured in life. Everybody has that feeling. And I don't want you to raise your hand this time, but I want to do another little internal survey here. How many of us, any time in our lives, have ever hurt, abused, injured, betrayed, robbed, neglected, or abandoned someone else? Just think about yourself for a minute. Have you ever in your anger, fear, or disconnection lashed out even a little bit at someone else? You know, I can remember moments in the grocery store when I took it out on the clerk, and that wasn't even the person that I was angry at the time. If you said no to both these questions, I would invite you to come up here and give this talk for me. Because I've had to work with forgiveness the last 2 weeks while I was preparing for this talk. When we talk of forgiveness, we're speaking of releasing, letting go, and relaxing into the well-being that is natural to us in the universe. And so today we're contemplating the subject of forgiving ourselves and forgiving other people. Someone wisely said once that holding on to resentment, anger, and hurt is like drinking poison yourself and expecting someone else to die. Now, I see forgiving as being like weeding a garden. And I noticed, I went out to weed this week, so I was thinking about weeding. And I noticed that to inspire me to do the task of weeding at all, I had to have a vision on what the garden was supposed to look like. I had to have this clear vision of space on the ground between healthy, vibrant vegetables and flowers. I had to have a sense that selection was an important thing, that selectivity and discernment was important. Because if I didn't appreciate some combination of plants out there, then the dandelions would look great amidst the tomatoes, and the clover would look wonderful surrounding the petunias, but it didn't seem that way to me. I wanted it to be orderly. I wanted it to be beautiful. Otherwise, I would have just celebrated the diversity and sat down and had a glass of iced tea instead of weeding. So I decided to weed. To do the task of forgiving also stems from love and selectivity. We appreciate our lives much more when they're filled with beauty, productivity, and grace. I appreciate health more than illness, don't you? I'd rather be prosperous than poor. I'd rather feel love more than hate. How many of you have ever gone out eagerly in the morning to weed? Anybody had that experience? Do you know what that feels like? We have some gardeners in this group. I weeded my garden Thursday morning, and I delighted in the day. It was a gorgeous day, and my garden's on the west side of the house, so early in the morning it was cool, and it felt really comfortable. Now, my mother is a wonderful gardener, and my mom taught me how to weed right. She had rules. She had definite rules. So I went out early, and I watered the garden, and I let it set, came inside, had breakfast, allowed the soil to soften up so it would easily release the roots of the weeds. And so I came out, and I had all the right tools. I had my gardening gloves, I had my fork, and I was ready. I put newspaper down on the ground so that I had something to kneel on, and I started digging up roots in the front right corner of my garden. And it came up easily. The watering had worked, the ground was soft, I was following the roots to the bottom, to their source, and I was feeling really good about myself. So I'm doing a good job here. But after the first couple of dozen roots, I started getting tired. And I started noticing that I had many dozen left to go. I hadn't weeded my garden for quite a while. And I also noticed that I had several plants that I wanted to get in the ground that were sitting there waiting and wanting to be planted and watered. And so I started to hurry. And I would lean over and grab with my bare hand and pull on the weed. Now, weeds are evolutionarily designed to avoid lazy gardeners like me. And so they give up their leaves easily and the roots stay in the ground. And I bet you can guess what my garden's going to look like next week. After the rain and the sun, the roots will yield more weeds. Aside from the area that I conscientiously weeded, there will be new weeds everywhere that I just popped the top and left the root. Jesus said we should forgive until 70 times 7. I think that's because we pluck the leaves off our weeds of hurt, but we don't always have the tools, the stamina, and the time to go to the source and eliminate the roots. We conscientiously release the hurts, treating and praying to see our wholeness revealed. But often weeks or months later, we find ourselves faced with the same hurt, the same anger, the same fear that we felt before. And so we do it again. We forgive again. We let go. We release. We regain our equilibrium. We feel better. We see our garden clear out. We feel good about it. We feel like we've done a good job. We've forgiven. And yet, a few weeks later, a few months later, we find ourselves feeling betrayed or angered or hurt again. We may turn the other cheek and look elsewhere, but we find ourselves coming back sometimes right to where we started. Makes it seem like forgiving isn't worthwhile, doesn't it? How do you forgive and forgive permanently is the question. Now, I don't want you to get me wrong. It is International Forgiveness Day. I'm promoting forgiveness today. And forgiving is a whole lot better than not forgiving. Forgiving is infinitely better than actively holding on to hurt, anger, and resentment. For that holding on creates in our lives new opportunities to feel hurt, angry, and resentful. If the feeling we're holding is resentment, you can bet that within the next week we're going to receive back an opportunity from the universe to feel more resentment. That's just how it works. The tone we're sending out to the universe returns back to us as experience. If we let it go and forgive, we create for ourselves, at least for a time, a period of beautiful garden, of ease and delight and peace. It feels so good that we start to attract to us delightful experiences. It is delicious to be in that space of peace and forgiveness. But it's like a badly weeded garden. It looks good, and the flowers and vegetables thrive for a little time. But soon, as we gaze proudly at our garden of life, we see those little weeds of resentment and anger and fear popping up again in places we didn't expect. And we have more work to do again. Well, that doesn't sound like much fun, so there must be an alternative I'm suggesting. And it is just this. If forgiveness is about letting go, then perhaps mastering forgiveness is about ultimately letting go of the idea that there may be any need to forgive at all. For forgiveness, at its very nature, implies judgment. It implies that we have been hurt. Now, all of us experience being hurt. We all agreed to that. And judgment is normal. Everybody does it. If someone hurts me, I normally would say, that person hurt me. That person is bad and wrong. If someone assaults me, I would say, that person is evil, and they deserve to be punished. Right? Isn't that what we usually say in our society? But maybe it isn't right. Maybe there's another way to look at it. From a science of mind perspective, I'm 100% responsible for the outcome of my life. And every day, the tone that I'm setting is returning to me as experience. And I can experience it as pain and anger and hurt, or I can experience joy and love and forgiveness, ultimate forgiveness, relief of judgment. Well, if I vibrate fear and anger, I get back people who hurt me and upset me. Does that make sense? You understand that? Then who is there to forgive? If I'm causing it, if I'm vibrating that, then it isn't personal. That person who hurts me doesn't do it personally to me. They do it in response to my vibration. If they weren't there doing it, someone else would be there doing it. Because I'm vibrating that. It's my signal to the universe. So who is there to forgive? Well, I guess you could say I blame myself. I'm vibrating it, so it must be me who needs to be blamed. But when I vibrate fear and anger, it's not because I know better, because I'm doing it right and I choose to do it wrong. It's because I don't know any better. It's because I haven't figured out how to do it. In my life, I've vibrated a whole lot of victimhood up until age 35. I was abused in a lot of different environments, assaulted and experienced a lot of pain and upset. I had an abusive marriage for 6 years where I ended up going to the doctor or going to the shrink to try to deal with what was happening to me. But it wasn't personal. It could have been anybody else. It didn't have to be my husband. I could vibrate victimhood from almost anyone in those days. I was really good at it. But at age 35, I discovered science of mind. And I had another choice. I didn't have to stay there. I didn't have to vibrate there. I didn't have to think that anymore. So I changed my thinking and I changed my life. Remember the old saying, to err is human and to forgive is divine? Does that sound familiar? Well, I think it's wrong. To judge and forgive is human. To love is divine. Practitioner Crystal Cheryl Bell, in yesterday's reading in this month's Science of Mind magazine, said, Many people turn away from God when a loved one dies, or when they cannot reconcile the facts of war, violence, drugs, and poverty with a loving God. As we step back to view our experiences from a larger perspective, however, the questions change. What is the meaning of this experience? How can I realize the presence of God in the midst of this condition that hurts? Now, this is not an airy-fairy suggestion. This is her word still. I'm still quoting her. For denying the real issues of life, it's not an airy-fairy suggestion. But go straight to the heart of the matter. If we can begin to practice seeing and realizing the presence of God right in the midst of what is occurring there, out there, something begins to transform in here, inside us. As I see rightly, God is revealed. This is the essence of science of mind. As we develop heaven consciousness, we can experience a healing, a transformation, an inspiration, and we begin to have a deep and wise understanding of life. I believe the way to the tools, the time, and the stamina to ultimate release, absolute forgiveness, the whole forgiveness, is to practice the presence of God in our lives. We talk here every Sunday about celebrating who we truly are. Who we truly are is God expressing. God expressing in human form. We are divine. That's the bottom line of our teaching. We are divine. If that's true, then with practice, we are capable of seeing things as God sees them. And God is not judging. God is loving. In week 9 of the Science of Mind foundational class that David quoted from this morning, we are reminded that the God we believe in is not a judge. Now, this comes as a surprise to many people who take the foundational class. It was to me when I first encountered Science of Mind, because I thought God's job was to judge. You know, did God quit his job all of a sudden? You know, it's hard to understand a little bit at first, but the God we believe in Science of Mind is an impersonal God of law. And a personal God of love. Now, that's a paradox, but in spiritual maturity, we learn to deal with paradox, so deal with it. Our God, as I understand it, allows us to create our lives through our thoughts and feelings. As we feel love and joy, we create love and joy in our lives. As we feel hate and anger, we create situations that bring us more hate and anger. It's all the same to God. However, there is a personal God of love that dwells within us, that is who we are. It's the very nature of our being that love wells up from within us when we allow it to, when we create an environment for it to be expressed. As I best understand it, God created a beautiful playground on this earth and sent extensions of itself as us, you and me, to use our divine nature to create for ourselves lives of joy. But somehow we forgot who we were in the denseness and darkness of this experience. And it's taken us some significant rattling around in this planet in order to understand who we are and that we do have the power to create our lives. In the meantime, weeds have kind of overgrown the Garden of Eden. Have you noticed? There are places where it feels like there are weeds. And so now we know we can change our thinking and change our lives. We're in the process of developing the skills to create something that pleases us more. So we have the opportunity to plant for ourselves a more selective and orderly garden with more flowers and vegetables than weeds. Like weeding the garden, the impetus to weed in our lives comes from a vision of what life can be. When we live in despair, we don't see that there is anything to do except push back at people who push at us. But when we create a vision of life that is filled with good, with love, with friends and health and connection and well-being, then we are inspired to find new ideas. clearer ways of thinking of our lives and the people in them that release us from the burdens of resentment, anger, and fear. Ernest Holmes said, "Enjoy today. Refuse to carry the corpse of a mistaken yesterday." Apparently, Dr. Holmes had no problem with forgiveness. He says in the Science of Mind textbook, "One of the first things to do is to love everybody. If you have not done this, begin to do it at once." As if it were that easy. Could it be that easy? Remember, everybody in this audience has been hurt as you have been. You're probably not the only one who might be thinking right now, "My situation is harder, unique, or difficult." But Holmes goes on to say, "There is always more good than bad in people, and seeing the good tends to draw it forth. Love is the grandest healing and drawing power on earth. It is the very reason for being." And he continues, "It is a law that the man who sees what he wants to see, regardless of what appears, will someday experience in the outer what he has so faithfully seen within. From selfish reasons alone, if from no loftier reason, we cannot afford to find fault, to hate, or even to hold in mind anything against any living soul." That's such an important quote that Duke put it in his contemplation. So we're really coordinated here this morning. Can you believe it that it is in your best interest to love everyone? The people that are easy to love and the people that are hardest. If you can, that's your first tool. A tool that gives you motivation because it's in your best interest to love. The second tool comes from understanding who you really are and who everyone else is and how the world works. Now, if my understanding is correct, integrated from Science of Mind teachings, the world is a playhouse. We're all acting our roles. Isn't it easier to release judgment for an actor playing an abuser? Neil Donald Walsh, have any of you read Conversations with God? He wrote a good book. He's written a new book. Have any of you read his new book? Few people. It's awesome. It's called The Little Soul and the Sun. It's a children's book. And I would like to quote rather extensively from his book here because he teaches a wonderful lesson. There is a little soul who is preparing to come down to earth. And he is conversing with someone called the friendly soul. So we have two characters here. We have the little soul and the friendly soul. The friendly soul has volunteered out of love to be the bad guy this time, as they come down to earth so that the little soul can experience himself as forgiveness and love. The little soul is delighted from his cosmic perspective that the friendly soul loves him so much as to be willing to slow down his angelic vibration, become dark and dense enough to do this bad thing for him. But the friendly soul, the one who's coming to be the bad guy, asks a gift in return from the little soul. He says, "In the moment that I do the worst to you that you can possibly imagine, in that very moment, remember who I really am." "Oh, I will," cried the little soul. "I promise. I will always remember you as I see you right here and now." "Good," said the friendly soul. "Because you see, I will have been pretending so hard, I will have forgotten myself. And if you do not remember me as I really am, I may not be able to remember for a very long time. And if I forget who I am, you may even forget who you are. And then we will need another soul to come along and remind us of who we both are." "No, we won't," said the little soul. "I promise I will remember you, and I will thank you for bringing me this gift, this chance to experience myself in love as who I really am." And so the agreement was made, And at all the moments in that new lifetime, whenever a new soul appeared on the scene, whether that new soul brought joy or sadness, and especially if it brought sadness, the little soul thought of what God had said. Always remember, God has smiled. I have sent you nothing but angels. I believe this is the second tool, the promise that we have been sent nothing but angels. It is a tool that gives us the time and the stamina to weed to the roots of the hurt. For each weed of hurt, there is an angel there, an angel like us, who perhaps for a time has forgotten who she or he really is. And as I remember who I am, I delight in extending that recognition to others. Others today, like the people sitting to your right and your left in this room, and others in the past who may have hurt us, forgetting who they were and the agreements we had, and others whom I have hurt, forgetting who I was. Now, as I remember more and more, I can extend that love and that light wherever it needs to go, to everyone I have ever known, to someone I resented for 30 years, or to someone who was rude to me, cutting me off in traffic today. I remember God said, I have sent you nothing but angels. I see now there's really not much weeding to be done, just a recognition that the garden has a higher order. I need to step back to see those weeds as angels. And the weeds are transformed into flowers. Their beauty, grace, and love begins to be revealed. I am released from the need to forgive altogether, for I remember our agreements to come forth and play out this game. For those we consider our enemies are our playmates on the scale of eternity, fellow actors in a play. And now, it's time to cease being just the actors and become the authors, producers, and directors of our plays, the designers of our gardens. The friendly soul, in the course of the negotiations for his role to play with the little soul, said it this way, "Don't be so amazed. You have done the same for me, don't you remember? Oh, we have danced together, you and I, many times. Through the eons and across all the ages have we danced. Across all time and in many places have we played together. You just don't remember. We have been all of it. We have been the up and down of it, the left and right of it. We've been the here and there of it, the now and then of it. We've been the male and female of it, the good and bad. We have both been the victim and the villain of it. Thus we have come together, you and I, many times before, each bringing to the other the exact and perfect opportunity to express and experience who we really are. So I invite you today, take a deep breath and look again at the weeds of hurt that have been choking the growth of the garden of your life, to see that learning to love is in your best interest, to remember that God has sent you only angels, to begin to truly understand that each experience in one way or another has helped you grow and expand and increase your awareness, to bring you here to recognize who you truly are. Let's appreciate each moment that has brought us to this one, to bless each person, each situation, each thing that happened along the way with gratitude and thanks, and to recognize all of the friendly souls who came to play with us. Now let's bring down the curtain on that play and bring up the curtain on a new one. When you choose to consciously recognize God in all things, experiences, situations, and people, where you allow the love and the light to shine brightly, where the rain falls gently and the vegetables and the flowers grow. You experience prosperity, well-being, right relationships and health, and you have lots of other wonderful gardeners to play with. And so it is. Let's have a prayer. And so in this moment, we see our garden as perfect, whole and complete, for it has been that way all along. We forgot who we were. We forgot who the others were. But now we do remember. In love and light, we wholly forgive. We forgive by releasing the judgment that required forgiveness in the first place. And with gratitude and joy and love, we allow our garden to bloom. The patterns change. It's quite natural. When you look for love everywhere, you see love everywhere. When you acknowledge the light that exists in every person, in every situation, the light shines more brightly. Pretty soon, you forget that you ever didn't remember. You see the light everywhere you go. You feel the spirit, the love, the light welling up within you. And you see it reflected in the eyes and the hearts and the faces of everyone you meet. I declare that we live in the light. I accept and claim it for each person here and for myself. And I claim it also for each person who's put a request in our Ministry of Prayer box to live from love. To remember that we agreed to be here, to experience this life in darkness and denseness, and then to have the joy of remembering who we truly are. So let us celebrate in joy today, grateful and appreciative of all of those who come together to teach us to know us. To know the truth of our being, the divine nature of ourselves. I know that all is well. I see it clearly and I give thanks for it. So I simply relax. I trust. And I release my word into the law, allowing it to be. And so it is. Sing